mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, experts estimate that 1 in 8 older adults experience some form of mistreatment. The message of Elder Abuse Awareness Month is that anyone can be a victim, and there is help available. Also this morning, under the Trump administration, American energy policy has shifted back toward fossil fuel production again, but the renewable industry insists it's not going away. We have what you need in and around your home to make it a great summer season, and just in time for Father's Day, Uncle John's action-packed bathroom reader makes the perfect gift for the man who has everything. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. This is big news. ESPN's College Football Game Day is coming to Columbus on week number one, and that means that legendary analyst Lee Corso will be ending his career where his trademark tradition started. Corso's final appearance on College Game Day will be in Columbus when Texas faces the Ohio State Buckeyes. Rematch of the terrific showdown from last year's college football playoff. The Longhorns and the Buckeyes. Corso's famous headgear picks. The tradition began at Ohio State in 1996 when he picked the Buckeyes to beat Penn State. So it has come full circle. He has made 430 total headgear selections, and Ohio State actually holds the most picks with 45. The soon-to-be 90-year-old former college football head coach announced his retirement back in April, and it will be at Ohio State. What is that, August 30th? Can you imagine, I mean, how crazy that's going to be in Columbus that day? For Lee Corso, I texted my son, who lives in the Columbus area, yesterday when I heard the news. I said, we should go. I said, do you realize how incredibly insane that's going to be? What a madhouse that's going to be for Lee Corso's final College Game Day? Yeah, I know, but that would be really cool. So we look forward to that. It'll give us just one more reason to look forward to that week one game showdown between Texas and Ohio State. Some less than good news to pass along regarding the state of Ohio. I saw this on the Newswire. An invasive species of stinging ant is spreading across the United States, with detections in at least 20 states, including Ohio. This is your doom and gloom story. Every day there's got to be a doom and gloom story. Society is doomed. We're all going to die story. And this is, I guess, our doom and gloom item. The Asian needle ant. The Asian needle ant. It's a shiny, dark brown to black insect that is just 0.2 inches in length, according to the U.S. Forest Service. They typically nest in dark, hidden hardwood habitats, such as logs and landscape timbers, and they form in small colonies. Now, here's the concern. The Asian needle ants can, as the name would imply, sting when bothered. They can sting you, and that can lead to symptoms such as skin reactions, including hives and itching, low blood pressure, swollen tongue or throat, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, dizziness or fainting, weak or rapid pulse, and wheezing or difficulty breathing. And that's not all. It says more severe symptoms, as if those are not severe enough. More severe symptoms can include anaphylaxis or psychological reactions, such as a feeling of impending doom. I think this story alone is enough to give me a feeling of impending doom. So you don't want to mess with these. To protect yourself, wear thick gloves when working outside, and remove nesting sites by stacking your firewood off the ground is one way of doing that. And again, landscape timbers, probably not a good idea to have those on the ground. So eliminate those. I know that those have kind of fallen out of favor anyway. I don't know that so many people have those anymore, but those can be nesting sites as well. So look out for the Asian needle ant. Wow. That is a doom and gloom story right there. My goodness. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The first things that you need to know this morning. Some interesting research. It turns out that drinking sugar could be worse than eating it. It could be worse for your health to drink your sugar instead of eating it. Researchers at Brigham Young University have found that drinking sugary drinks like soda or juice is linked to a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes than excessive sugar in food. They say that sugars typically found in drinks disrupt the liver's metabolism more so than sugar-laden foods, which causes a greater impact on blood sugar. So, that should be, if you're trying to eliminate sugar from your diet, that should be the first thing you do. Eliminate those sugary drinks. And the foods are a lower priority, I guess. So you can look at that any number of ways. It's kind of good news, bad news there. I choose to look at it as good news in that if you eliminate the sugary drinks, maybe you're okay with a little extra sugar in your foods. I'm sure that's not the way they meant for that to be interpreted, but that's the way I'll interpret it anyways. This is research, more medical scientific research. Not medical so much, but scientific research. This from the file of Duh. It's a study published in Psychological Bulletin, the journal Psychological Bulletin, indicates that excessive screen time can lead to socio-emotional problems in children. Duh. Isn't this something that we already knew? They say this. Their analysis found associations between screen time and issues like anxiety, depression, hyperactivity, and aggression, particularly in girls, which I thought was kind of interesting. Children under the age of 2 with any screen time, children between the ages of 2 and 5 with over an hour a day, and kids over 2 years of old, or kids over the age of 5 with 2 hours per day, were all at higher risk. So that's the threshold. No screen time for kids under 2, an hour a day for kids 2 to 5, and 2 hours a day for kids over the age of 5. The study suggests that kids experiencing emotional difficulties may turn to screens for relief, which creates a harmful cycle. It's a snowball effect here. So, of course, the advice, set limits, use parental controls, and provide alternative activities, the recommended strategy for parents to promote better mental health in their children. Again, this is from the file of Duh, we knew this, but now we have scientific proof of it. There you go. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You know how those GLP-1 medications, Ozempic, Wegovy, etc., have been so popular? They have become so, they're like the hot medication for weight loss. Well, might want to think twice about that. A recent study from the Cleveland Clinic is challenging the efficacy of weight loss drugs like Ozempic, finding that patients who are taking those GLP-1 medications actually lost up to 50% less weight than what was reported in clinical trials. In other words, they only work half as well as advertised. The study was published in the Obesity Journal, analyzed nearly 8,000 Americans who were prescribed these medications. Participants who adhered to the drugs for a full year lost between 4 and 12 of their body weight. 4 and 12% of their body weight, which is not nothing, but it is significantly less than the 15 to 21% that was reported in clinical trials. Add to that the fact that many people don't even last a year on the medications. That's among people who were on them for a year. And a lot of people don't even make it that far for reasons including high costs, side effects, and medication shortages. So this miracle drug for weight loss may not be quite the miracle that many people were expecting. Something to think about, because those have been so incredibly popular, but very expensive and sometimes hard to get. Interesting stuff there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Dimchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly sunny today with a high in the middle 80s, mostly clear tonight, low in the mid 60s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol says more teenagers are dying because they're not wearing their seatbelts.
The percentage of teen drivers killed in crashes without a seatbelt jumped from 63% in 2021 to 81% last year. The Dietrich family knows the pain all too well after losing their daughter in a tragic crash.
We set down the rules of you need to wear your seatbelt, but we didn't explain why it was so important.
The push for a primary seatbelt law in Ohio is gaining momentum as Governor Mike DeWine and others call for action. Right now, Ohio remains one of 15 states in which not wearing a seatbelt is a secondary offense, meaning you can't be pulled over just for that.
WTOL 11's Amanda Fay reporting. Findlay City Schools has announced that Wilson Vance Elementary School teacher Michael Snyder has been selected for the Region 1 Franklin B. Walter Outstanding Educator Award. The school district says Mr. Snyder was nominated for the positive impact he has on students and colleagues, as well as his dedication to students with disabilities. Findlay City Schools says it's lucky to have this state-recognized outstanding educator in the school district. Get more details in this story on our website. The Findlay Family YMCA Frog Swim Team will host the 42nd Annual Flag City Invitational this weekend at Riverside Pool. This year, there will be even more participation than there's been in recent years, with more than 450 swimmers, including 32 from Findlay, as well as a total of 16 teams participating, including teams from throughout Northwest Ohio and from Columbus, Cincinnati, Strongsville, and Pittsburgh. The meet is free and open to the public, and the YMCA is encouraging the public to come cheer on their Y Frogs, who will be competing against multiple teams from across Ohio and other states. The swim meet will mean some closures at Riverside Pool. On Thursday, the pool will close at 4 p.m., and the pool will be closed for the swim meet from Friday through Sunday. Get more details in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news at WFIN.com.
Well, now our cover story this morning. Once again, June is Elder Abuse Awareness Month. As we were talking about last week, this often takes the form of financial fraud and scams, but it can also involve both physical and emotional abuse. And joining us this morning to discuss that aspect of protecting those we care about is Jennifer Roberts, Adult Protective Services Supervisor for the Area Agency on Aging 3, which serves Hancock County in this capacity. And Jennifer, the numbers that I read estimate 1 in 8 older adults will be victims, and most of those are not reported. And that underreporting aspect, that's really the one common denominator in every form of abuse. And the same goes in this case.
That's correct. We see a lot of apprehension and individuals that are reporting or that may be fearful in reporting cases of abuse. They're unsure whether it would qualify as abuse. They're also fearful that by reporting there might be some retaliation or just uncomfortable about putting that report out there. But one thing I do want to emphasize on reporting elder abuse through Adult Protective Services, our reporters remain anonymous. So reports can be remain anonymous when reporting. So we highly encourage those to report abuse, even if it's suspected abuse that they may see from a loved one, neighbor, friend, church member, coworker, so forth.
One of the other really important points to remember here is that, again, just like child abuse or domestic violence, this can happen to anyone. I mean, there really is no prototypical victim, right?
Correct. We see this across all demographics, races, ethnicities, financial, their socio-economic backgrounds. We see this across the board.
That being said, I would imagine, though, that there are some individuals who may be more at risk than others.
I would say the individuals that are more at risk are those that have, that are more the ones that maybe have some higher medical issues, mental health issues. They're kind of socially isolated within their homes. They don't have a lot of social support that's checking in on them daily or weekly. So those are the individuals that we see, especially in our exploitation cases that we're starting to see and we're getting high numbers on, is the online scamming and exploitation, where our older adults are becoming victims due to being on the internet, social media. They're starting to make new friends on social media and starting to become scammed in those areas. And it's due to a lot of social isolation. They're just very lonely and they're looking for ways to connect with others.
Are there warning signs to watch for?
For exploitation, say that individual just is now speaking about a new friend that they just met online, or you're starting to see them go out and buy gift cards. Changes in their finances, you know, where they were comfortable at one point, but now they're running out of money at the end of the month. So those are some warning signs with the financial exploitation. And obviously with other signs of elder abuse, we also have physical abuse. We have emotional abuse. We have sexual abuse and neglect and self-neglect. So especially with self-neglect, individuals that are not making it to their medical appointments, or they're not being able to pick up their prescriptions or get groceries, and their appearances is changing, you know, with physical abuse, markings, bruises, scratches, and things to that nature.
I would imagine that those may be, especially when we talk about self-abuse, which is a whole other aspect of this, which, you know, again, is good for people to recognize that that actually does happen. These are also good questions for seniors to ask themselves. Perhaps it's not a case of being afraid to speak up, perhaps that they aren't even aware that they are being abused or even doing this to themselves to a certain degree.
Correct. And I think a lot of seniors, they don't speak up because they have a fear of losing their independence. They often feel that if they do speak up, that they're going to lose their independence and being able to remain independent and make decisions for themselves. So they often just stay silent.
My family's going to say, well, it's time to send mom to a home.
Absolutely. And that is, I would say that is one of our top fears that we hear. Yeah. It's a very common fear that we hear often.
You know, along those same lines, we were just talking yesterday about some of the strain that is experienced by family caregivers. And I would imagine you see these cases where that can escalate, kind of spiral out of control into a situation of abuse or more likely neglect, where caregivers have to constantly kind of check themselves in that regard.
Yes. Yep. And that's what we often see. And it may be unintentional at that point, just due to caregiver, the stress related
being overwhelmed to
the caregiver and being overwhelmed, and that the care for that individual is starting to become more than what they're able to provide. And so it tends to fester, and and that is truly one of our bigger concerns, is the caregiver stress. So, you know, from Adult Protective Services standpoint, we do like to come in and we do like to provide caregiver education, caregiver resources to help provide more opportunities and resources for that family and that individual. One, we want to prevent harm to our individual, and we also want to promote wellness within our caregivers as well, because, you know, it's a huge responsibility to to take on.
Yeah, that is such a good point, that it's not always necessarily about coming in and throwing someone in jail. I mean, obviously, there are certain situations where that's the outcome that needs to happen. But a lot of it is just providing resources, providing help, guiding people to the to a better outcome in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, our purpose is we want to promote health and safety, but we're also there to provide education, mm-hmm. support. We're there to advocate not only for our older adults, but also for our caregivers, just to kind of help give them a roadmap of moving forward.
So with all of that in mind, and we were mentioning some of the warning signs that the folks can be on the lookout, what should someone do to intervene if they do suspect there is a case of elder abuse?
Yeah, so I would highly suggest if you do suspect that an elder may be abused, they can call their local law enforcement, whether it's your local sheriff's office, police departments. They can also call our agency, 419-222-7723. You can also call a statewide number, which is 1-855-644-6227. But I would just highly encourage to contact your local law enforcement or call your local adult protective services.
Don't turn the other way, because this is something that is not likely to get better. Early intervention is obviously going to be the key. And there are more options, as you're mentioning, available to all involved when you know, get involved earlier in the process. Are there ways to proactively prevent this? I mean, for example, if seniors are in isolation, like you were mentioning, obviously that makes them more vulnerable, including those individuals and more social activities or interactions that can help remove or minimize that risk factor.
Yeah, you know, and I would say that if you are neighborly, check in on your neighbors. You know, if you haven't seen Mrs. Smith in a while, maybe, you know, make it a point to just knock on the door and check in on Mrs. Smith and see if her children or if they have any children or next of kin or friends and family are checking in. It's good to just to do a touch base, a quick check in, and just keep an eye on each other and ask questions. Hey, you know, are you if you're chatting with him? Hey, how you feeling lately? Are you able to get out and get your medications? Are you able to get some grocery shopping in? Just start talking about your daily activities and go from there. Just some basic dialogue and checking in goes a long way.
Again, Jennifer Roberts is Adult Protective Services Supervisor for the Area Agency on Aging 3, which serves Hancock County with respect to elder abuse on this Elder Abuse Awareness Month. And Jennifer, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Chris, for having us.
Well, with the new administration's refocus on traditional sources of energy, it may not be as obvious, but clean power is still a booming industry. New report from the American Clean Power Association shows it's already contributing $18 billion to the U.S. economy and supporting over 120,000 American jobs, with more growth ahead. J.C. Sandberg is Chief Policy Officer at the American Clean Power Association. And J.C., as we alluded to, for many years, federal energy policy emphasized and prioritized the development of clean energy technologies. And that is not the case currently. So what is driving the surge in clean energy manufacturing today?
The American consumer wants more clean energy and to power their homes and businesses. And that, as you said, has led to a record level of deployment. And as we deploy more of clean power in the U.S., we want to make more of the parts and components that go into those projects here in this country. And that's led to the beginning of a great story. 200 facilities are currently operating, generating these components. 200 more are planned, with an additional $150 billion of investment.
So kind of expand on that economic impact and how this manufacturing growth contributes to the U.S. economy in the sense that the rising tide lifting all boats. We've all heard that saying before.
Sure. And so I think this is a big boost to the American economy, and it's the clean energy manufacturing space is helping reverse decades of decline in U.S. manufacturing. Currently, we employ 120,000 people. We're contributing tens of billions of dollars annually in economic activity. But again, this is the beginning of the story, and there are more facilities and more clean energy manufacturing jobs and economic activity coming online literally every day.
How is this impacting local communities? If you look at the state of Ohio, Northwest Ohio in particular, what kind of impact is that having? What kind of jobs are being created?
These manufacturing jobs are steady, well-paying jobs. In 2024, the clean energy workforce made $42,000 more than the average U.S. worker. And what does that mean in a state like Ohio? In Ohio, there are currently 9 facilities online powering 10,000 jobs. By 2030, we anticipate that will be 15 facilities supporting more than 14,000 jobs. Ohio is a top 3 state in the country in solar manufacturing. Facilities like Illuminate are producing millions of solar panels to power homes in Ohio and across the country. And that facility is employing 1,500 Ohioans. Those jobs are allowing people to stay in their communities. They're spending more of their dollars in those communities, supporting retail, food service, hospitality. So it really is a virtuous economic cycle.
Now, I know, obviously, you're high on the future, and you have reason to be laying out those numbers as you just did, but that's not to say that there aren't challenges ahead, and maybe even more so now, given, again, as we were mentioning, the shift in emphasis in terms of federal policy on energy. So, first of all, what are those biggest challenges in the road ahead?
Well, Chris, if we just maybe talk quickly about, you know, with the explosive load growth in this country or demand for electricity, we need every electron we can get to power data centers and AI and the electrification of homes. And so I think there are lots of demand for electricity, and electrons aren't political. The industry has the capital, the technology, the workforce to continue on this journey. I think, as you point out, what we need is from our partners in Washington, D.C., our stable policies to continue this American manufacturing resurgence.
So, well, then let me ask real directly, because many critics, and I'm sure you've heard this before, claim that the clean energy industry could not survive were it not for the federal subsidies to keep it going. True or false?
Chris, this industry has been around for many, many presidential administrations. It's going to be around for many more. This is a low-cost solution for American consumers, and the consumers want it. We are going to be a part of the energy mix for years to come as part of an important all-of-the-above energy strategy.
We're talking about, you know, some of the challenges that inevitably will lie ahead. How do you become proactive, or how are you proactive in addressing those challenges, in overcoming challenges that you may see ahead, even before you get there?
Well, we, like any industry, we have to be good partners. We're in the local communities where we operate, which we're doing. That's creating a groundswell of public support. Like I said at the top, the American consumer wants clean energy. And so as we see, as an industry, any energy industry, as we see challenges, we face those challenges head on, and there's tremendous opportunity. And this American manufacturing story is one of those opportunities that's presented from the deployment of clean energy.
Again, J.C. Sandberg is a chief policy officer of the American Clean Power Association with us this morning. Where do we get more information?
All the facts and figures you could ever want, Chris, at cleanpower.org.
J.C. Sandberg, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the summer is just heating up, and joining us this morning with what you need in and around your home to make it a great season is lifestyle and home design expert Kelly Edwards. Kelly, I had to chuckle a little bit when I saw here that we are going to start in the laundry room, because anyone with kids knows how much time you spend doing laundry in the summer.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. You're actually the third person that has said all those grass stains and all those piles of laundry in the summer yes. are next level.
Yes, absolutely. So what do you got for us here?
Okay, so yes, let's start in the laundry room. Believe it or not, I actually really, really like doing laundry, and so does my husband. And it's one of those places that we seriously excel when it comes to teamwork in the laundry room. But the reason why we do that is because we love the machines that we use, and we love LG. We love the brand. So basically, LG has innovative laundry solutions like a wash tower and a wash combo. Sleek, space-saving solutions designed for today's lifestyle. What they have is built-in intelligence, intuitive controls, and they have quiet, efficient performance. So when I say that LG truly makes life easier, faster, and more enjoyable, take it from me. You need this product in your life. It makes laundry so much easier to do, especially with all those kids in the summertime.
Absolutely. You also talk about how to add personal touches to the home, kind of refreshing those spaces a little bit, if you will, for the summer. Time.
Exactly. So everyone likes to have people over in the summer, and it's always nice to have those personal touches, like maybe like a welcome sign, or maybe you want to like put a little things on planters, or, you know, maybe make a monogram tea towel, things like that. Well, Cricut Joy Extra is what I have with me today. I love the Cricut machine. Easy to use. It can cut 50 plus materials. So I'm talking about vinyl, cardstock, iron-on, you name it. It's super compact, fits into any space, so you don't need a craft room. No crafting experience required. And you basically go to Cricut.com, purchase a machine, and you can really spruce up your space for the summer.
You talk about unleashing your creative side. You know, you can even do that with the kids. You're looking for something to do with the kids during the summertime. You can kind of make that a family project.
Oh, absolutely. You could do such cute things, especially with Father's Day coming up.
There you go.
Maybe they can make something for dad.
Yeah. Let's see. Outside the home, obviously, this is the time when we spend a lot of time outdoors. You have some suggestions on keeping our outdoor furniture looking good through the season.
Absolutely. So now we all know that kind of that warmer weather creates those ideal conditions for like mold and mildew to grow on some of our surfaces. Well, yep. A great tip is get a bottle of Clorox disinfectant bleach. Basically, this will clean, this will disinfect, and this will eliminate all those odors and stains that is caused by that mold and mildew that can typically grow on some of our hard, non-porous surfaces. So you can use this on plastic lawn chairs, sealed wood picnic tables, so much more. Wipe them down. Make sure your outdoor spaces are fresh. This will really get your outdoor space ready for like all of the hosting or the outdoor barbecues. And I mean, sometimes if the furniture is dirty, nobody wants to sit on it, but this is a great way to keep everything clean.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a must have during the summer season. And while we are outside, you've got some ideas on summer grilling as well.
I do. You can't say summer entertaining without saying grilling, right? So the Ninja Flex Flame is one of my favorites right now. It's Ninja's first propane outdoor cooking system. It's a 5-in-1. So it grills, it smokes, it roasts, it griddles, and you can even make pizza in it. It has an exclusive Cyclonic Heat IQ technology, so it circulates that heat evenly. You get a more faster, more flavorful result than a traditional grill. Beginners to experts, doesn't matter. Both can use it. You're all going to create these really impressive meals with this. It's under $1,000, and you go to ninjakitchen.com. You can go to Home Depot. You can get it at Ace, Bath Pro Shop, or even Amazon, but I absolutely love it. Essential for summer.
Boy, talking about Father's Day coming up. There you go. There's a great gift idea. Dad will be the envy of the neighborhood for sure. Again, lifestyle and home design expert Kelly Edwards with us this morning. What you need in and around the home this summer season. Where do we get more information on all of this?
Well, you can obviously go to all the brands' websites, or I'll be posting all about it on my Instagram, which is Kelly Edwards Inc.
Kelly, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. I don't know if you heard about this story out of Toledo, where police are searching for an escaped inmate. So this is the story. 26-year-old Wanya Gray. Is that how you pronounce it? Wanya Gray. J-U-A-N-Y-A. Wanya Gray. As I understand it, he was charged with aggravated burglary, and they couldn't check him into the Lucas County Jail because he was intoxicated, just suffering from drug intoxication. So they were transporting him to a local hospital when he reportedly jumped from the transport vehicle and ran off in the vicinity of Cherry and Bancroft Streets. Now, mind you, he was still in belly chains and shackles when he got away. How would you like to be the transport officer and had to call that in? You're not going to believe this, but he got away. Police issued a description saying that he was last seen wearing a blue t-shirt and gray pants and, you know, chains and shackles. So you wouldn't think that it would be very difficult to spot. But apparently he's been on the run for like 3 days. I mean, he's in belly chains and shackles. It should be, you should stand out, you would think. Anyone with information on his whereabouts is being urged to contact police. You see someone in belly chains and shackles running around, you might want to call police. Might be somebody that probably shouldn't be running around free. You would just think that he would be fairly easy to spot there, but, you know, anyway. Not too far up the road, also in the broken news this morning. Did you hear about this at the Detroit airport? A 23-year-old passenger on Spirit Airlines, John Charles Robinson, has been arrested for making a fake bomb threat after missing his flight. Apparently, he was booked on a flight from Detroit to L.A., but he was, for whatever reason, being required to rebook, and he ended up missing his flight. According to authorities, he called the airline and warned that someone would try to blow up that flight and carry a bomb through security. I don't know. Did he missed his flight? He had to rebook, and so he was worried about missing his flight, so he called in the bomb threat to make sure that it didn't take off. That's not the... Usually it's better if you just rebook. Just rebook. The FBI, bomb-sniffing dogs, and federal air marshals responded, grounded the flight, deplaned the passengers, searched the aircraft, found nothing. After his arrest, Mr. Robinson admitted to making the call when confronted with the recording. He is now facing federal charges for conveying false information about a bomb threat. They don't take that fairly seriously, airport security officials. Bomb threats is... Yeah. Next time, just rebook. You miss your flight. That's what any reasonable person would do, right? You miss your flight, you call it a bomb threat. That's... That seems reasonable. There's the story of Jonathan Mason of Murray, Kentucky, who apparently was dissatisfied with the service he received from a local business. And so, again, he did what any reasonable person would do in that situation. He intentionally released a raccoon into the business and then fled the scene. He released a raccoon, according to the local police department there in Murray, Kentucky. The raccoon bit a person inside the business during the incident. Mr. Mason, who had previously been warned to stay away from the business, so apparently there has been some history there, he was arrested and now faces charges, including assault and trespassing. No word on where he got the raccoon in the first place. That's what I want to know. Is, did he come up with the raccoon to begin with? I don't know. Maybe we don't want to know. Let's see. More dumb criminals here. Dateline Clearwater, Florida, where a man is facing charges after he allegedly called 911 claiming that he had lost money at a local strip club. A 21-year-old Sultan Al-Nafay told dispatchers that he had paid a worker at the Oz Gentlemen's Club $300 for a private room, and he did not receive all of these services that he expected for his money. Let's put it that way. He expected certain services that were not provided for his money. And so he called 911 to say he'd been ripped off. When deputies responded, they say the man reeked of alcohol and he was placed under arrest. He was charged with misuse of the 911 system. And by the way, should we mention prostitution is illegal in Florida? So. And by the way, this was on Sunday morning. Shouldn't you be in church, man? Somebody needs some church there. How would you like to be the person on the other end of that 911 call? Get the dispatcher who gets that 911 call. Hey, I was ripped off at the strip club. I paid my money. I didn't get my happy ending here. And finally, in the broken news this morning, how about we finish up with a good story? I love this story. It comes from Manchester, England, where Ian Steele, who works as a cook at a local school, recently won over $1 million in the Euro Millions Millionaire Maker Lottery. Won $1 million. The 53-year-old happens to have spent nearly two decades caring for his wife, who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis while she was pregnant with their first daughter, Chloe. And so for the past two decades, he's been caring for his wife with MS. He initially thought he had not matched any numbers when he checked his ticket, but it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and so he was a little groggy. But he later received an email from the National Lottery congratulating him on his victory. Now, initially, he didn't think that was real. He thought he was being scammed, which would be the natural thing if you get an email saying you won the lottery. He later learned that it was, in fact, real. He did, in fact, win, and he started shaking like a leaf when he realized how much he had won. It works out, the exchange rate, it's £1 million, which works out to be $1.3 million U.S. He said, with his prize money, he plans to take his family, including his daughter Chloe, on a trip to Disneyland, which is a dream that they have long talked about. He also said the win will provide more options for accessible vacations due to his wife's condition and allow them to connect with their friends and family more easily. You gotta love it when good things happen to good people, you know? That is all kinds of awesome. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual, and in this case, a little heartwarming news there, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Riverside Civic Concert Series means great music each Wednesday night. Along with the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, WFIN is proud to emcee another season of concerts at the Bandshell at Riverside Park. The season opener Wednesday night with the Findlay Civic Concert Band. Concerts are at 7 p.m. and Sunday morning at 11. We air that week's concert courtesy of Coldwell Banker Flag City. Join us on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is vacation season, and if you are dreaming of sandy beaches while staring at your spreadsheets, you are certainly not alone. A new survey finds that 70% of Americans, 7 out of 10 of us, mentally clock out and enter vacation mode an average of 3 days before we physically go on vacation. 70% of us will mentally clock out early, an average of 3 days before we are physically on vacation. You ever done that? I have to admit, I am guilty. Survey also identified some clear warning signs that can tell you when you desperately need some time off. 62% of those in the survey know it's time for a vacation when they start feeling burnt out. That's the easy one. But 45% will catch themselves daydreaming about escaping the office. 44% become irritable with others. You had that happen? Yeah. Physical symptoms are also key indicators. 39% report persistent fatigue. Regardless of how much sleep they get, they just are always fatigued. That is a sure sign you need some time off. 35% will experience low energy even on the weekend, which is, you know, another sure sign that you are due for some time off. And how much time does it take? How much prep time? How much lead time do you need before you go on vacation? 45% of Americans in the survey say they need only 3 days to prepare adequately. Just 3 days. The same number of days that we mentally check out before we go on vacation. Just 3 days. We can be ready to go in 3 days. 36%, so little over a third, can be trip ready within a day or less. 24 hours, that's all I need. And an impressive 16% say they would need just a few hours to prepare for vacation. We're ready to go now. Just in time for Father's Day, we have the perfect gift. It is Uncle John's action-packed bathroom reader, the 37th edition. And the man behind Uncle John's readers is Brian Boone. Brian, the first Uncle John's book published, if I've got this right, in 1988 by the Bathroom Readers Institute. What has made this such a success that you are now on your 37th edition?
You know, I think we found an underserved demographic of people who, you know, stuck in their bathrooms, bored, didn't know what to do with themselves, using that moment of solace to multitask. And, everybody needs to take 5 or 10 minutes out of their day. And that's a great time to learn something or be entertained and put your phone away and just, bask in some good trivia knowledge that you can pass on to others.
Now, for those who don't know, these books are kind of a cross between Mad Magazine and the Old Farmer's Almanac, right? I mean, that's basically kind of where you come
that's
in on
pretty this. Good. I would say so. We're the internet before that there was the internet, but it's a lot of wry, folksy humor and a lot of just wacky information that you will not find anywhere else that we've gone ahead and curated for you.
Yeah, plenty of humor, plenty of dad jokes in here, plenty of stories that, well, let's just say probably belong in the bathroom that we won't get into. But then there are some amazing stories like the baseball plot to assassinate Fidel Castro, which you share in this edition of the book.
I mean, it's a whole article about the CIA's attempts to kill Castro. They tried 637 times to kill Castro, and he foiled them every time, including in 1967, Castro held this baseball tournament. He loved baseball. He played professionally before he became the dictator of Cuba. And so he had this big tournament at El Cerro Stadium in Havana, and he was going to watch these games from his presidential box. The CIA got word of this, and so they sent a guy down there, and he was supposed to sneak into the electrical control room of the stadium and then cut the power. And then while everything was dark, another guy was supposed to hurl grenades into Castro's box and kill him that way. But they got foiled because there were guards, in the electrical control room. So they never found the right moment to kill Castro. Yeah, imagine that. They thought of everything.
So folks will note that in the title, this is Uncle John's action-packed bathroom reader. What makes it action-packed?
Well, I mean, we got a lot of true crime stuff like Castro, a lot of sports, a lot of, forgotten moments in history, just it's very impactful and jumps off the page, I think.
And this, it should be noted among the other items in the book, some of this is very practical stuff. The best facts and stories to help dad become the most popular guy at the barbecue.
Yes, sir. That's right. You know, dads love to, you know, tell everybody, Hey, fun fact, you know, like, dads love that stuff. And I think we are one of the main providers of that. So, you know, you're welcome and sorry, I guess.
And this one was one of my favorites, one that I love, the piece on all the names for stuff you didn't know had a name.
Oh, I isn't that interesting? Like, this one was especially hard to research because how do you look up something if you don't know its name? But many of those things that you see, you didn't know how to name, like the thing that you that you measure your foot on at the shoe store. That's called a Brannock device.
Really?
Or how, those Chinese food takeout containers, those are called oyster pails. Or how a silent letter in a word is called an apsong. Your smallest toe, you probably call it your pinky toe, but it actually has a name. And that's your minimus.
Well, there you go. Amazing facts to astound and impress your friends. What is your favorite part of putting together these books?
You know, I always get surprised. I think I've seen it all, and then every year something will surprise me. Like the Castro was surprising to me. Finding out that Mr. Rogers loved to fart was pretty delightful. Just a couple of years ago, his widow Joanne told a reporter, apropos of nothing, that Mr. Rogers loved to fart. He thought they were hilarious, and he would do it in public. And he would apparently do those silent but deadly numbers, and then he would just turn to her and just look at her and just give her that big friendly Mr. Rogers smile while he was farting.
I would imagine you couldn't get angry at him. I mean, how could you get angry at Mr. Rogers for anything? I mean, if anybody could get away with that.
Yes. He's the sweetest man in the world. Yeah. If that was the worst thing he did, then
good point.
He really was a saint.
Yeah, good point. So what is next for the Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Institute and this series? Is there anything out there, any world yet to be mined for these kinds of stories and wacky trivia?
I mean, there's always something to write about. As long as human beings keep doing amazing things and silly things, we will have plenty to write about forever and ever. We've already got two more books lined up that'll be in stores within the next years, and so there's we're gonna keep going along.
If nothing else, you have an endless stream of gifts for dad. Uncle John's action-packed bathroom reader, the 37th edition, is available in time for Father's Day delivery or in ebook form for those who keep a Kindle in the bathroom. Brian Boone with us this morning. Do you have a website where folks can get more information?
We do. It's portablepress.com. You can order our books there. We've got a blog where you can find bonus content that's not in the books, and that's updated with great regularity, so to speak. And then you can find all of our wherever you buy your books.
Brian, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, which is goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the program, we encourage you to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others find the show as well. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll preview this weekend's Vet Fest celebration. Plus, local protesters will be out again this weekend. What are they railing against this time, and what do they hope to accomplish? Until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.